Hello, and welcome to The Alt Left.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back for the first time. This is our virgin christening podcast on November 12th in the year of our Lord Vishnu 2020.
Cherry popping fun.
And remember, the alt-left, which we believe in Voltaire, those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. Come join us for the next 30 minutes to 7 hours as we discuss alt-right tears and stupidity. Today,
yeah,
Kay, Matt, and I are going to be talking about the election that just happened, and most importantly, the Electoral College.
Nobody wins 2020.
Some people
won. Someone's going to win, but it's not going to be us.
Oh, definitely not the American people. No, everyone lost. Everyone lost.
There were people that won. They just weren't voters.
Yeah, exactly.
So, if we're going to be talking about the Electoral College, I think it's good to just put our... get elbow deep in what exactly is it, because everyone talks about it. Most people know it. I'm going to assume that damn near everyone tuning into this is aware of how it functions. But it's a good back to basics. I remember when I played high school football, one of the coaches used to say, it's all about, he'd walk up and he'd hold up a football and he'd say, "This is a football." And it was a joke, but it was to kind of be like, start from scratch one every time, because if you're missing a key point in the beginning, you're uninformed throughout the rest of it.
It's like defining terms when you're going through it to an in an argument.
That is a far more succinct and adult way to say what I was saying.
Yeah, yes. We will not tolerate that kind of thing on this podcast. No, sir.
I apologize.
Yeah, learn your place, sir. Learn your place.
So, I think we can all agree, Electoral College, it's based on something I'm not going to lie, I knew it was based on population density. What I did not know was that it was based on having an elector for every member of the House of Representatives and Senate.
Oh, no shit, really?
Yeah, it wasn't until I was looking up the Electoral College, looking for factoids on it, that I know that. I thought it was census data, which, I guess technically in a roundabout way.
A little bit.
Well, it is. Everybody gets two for each senator.
Each state gets three, actually.
And then, you get at minimum three, yeah, but you get two for each senator. And then you get for as many elector or as many congressmen as you have.
Yeah. So, the way it works out is there's an elector for everyone in the House of Representatives, which right now is 435, which it's been for quite a while. It needs to be updated.
Yeah.
And the Senate has 100. And then there's an additional three people for people who live in people who live in D.C.
District of Columbia.
Exactly. Yeah. So every state gets three electors. California is the most populous state because, we're California. Texas, I think, is number two, isn't it? California.
Either that or New York.
No. I think New York is known for being the most populous city, but as far as state goes, Texas and California are the big two.
Yeah.
You have one big blue one and one big red one.
Yeah. Per square mile, New York has a highest population density, but it goes California, then Texas.
Yeah.
I know they have the second most electoral votes because I know California gets three electors and we have 53 Congress people and two senators. So that's why we get 55.
Yeah. Texas at 29 million.
Yeah. And one of the things I think is a background fear that people think sometimes is that the electors, it's actually something I believe, it wasn't Jared Kushner, which it was actually one of his direct spawnlings, crawled out of hell and made a tweet about the electors should be doing their duty and voting for Trump regardless. But that's actually only happened a couple times. It's basically
a
formality.
It's much more rare.
Well,
electors are much more rare.
It's because they're selected by the party. So if you're selected by the Democrat or the Republican Party, you're not going to turn on that party.
Yeah.
Each state, regardless of who wins, if the Democrats win that particular state, the Democratic convention gets to choose its electors.
Yeah, it has. It's happened very rarely. In fact, it's been more often than not errors. People have showed up drunk. They've misspelled names. Electors actually tend to be a whole lot of worthless, jobless, aimless heirs of very rich and connected people.
Yeah.
Like the Bush children.
Apparently, there was one elector who voted for the same person for president and vice president. So there's some vice president out there that got a vote for president.
That's fantastic.
I thought it was funny.
I mean, Sleepy Joe could never do that.
No.
But something I wanted to talk about while we're on this one is how and why the Electoral College was established. Because it was established during the, like, it was actually established at the Constitution. And it was at the Constitutional Convention, not in the Articles of Confederation. And the Electoral College was actually, believe it or not, was a compromise. Half of the, it was basically two camps. I know, I'm sure there was a couple people out there who wanted to, like, draw straws or tip a cow, but for the most part, half the two largest camps were that they either wanted a populist vote, kind of like what would actually make sense today and what most modern humans do. And the other half wanted Congress to actually select the president, which actually was how senators were picked for a very long time, was they would actually be selected from the state senate. So like California State Senate would actually select the senators to go up. And that didn't change. That changed not that long ago. But yeah, it was actually made from a compromise during the drafting of the Constitution. And it's the only reason it is this way. And that's kind of explains why it's so unique and screwed up. Is because it's this strange, awful halfway margin between two viewpoints.
Kind of like most of America.
I actually was going to ask you guys, like, I've got a couple ideas. There's a couple historical viewpoints that are usually pulled to. But what are, let's talk about it. Why do you think this is even a system that existed besides the compromise? Like, I'm a firm believer in the theory of kind of like what Hamilton wrote in the Federalist Papers, and, you know, it was about making sure that some slack-jawed Welshman didn't get in.
I've always thought it was much more devious than that, to be quite honest. I think that they had no idea that, or they didn't want people that weren't educated voting. And so they put the Electoral College in so that this guy would go and vote for what he thought the people in his state wanted, regardless of how they voted. Like, that's how it started.
Yeah.
I've actually heard that take as well, that it was, the idea behind it was so that the dummies didn't get some, you know, somebody in there, that I guess the people with brains still got to control what was going on a little bit. I've heard that too.
Well, I know that something, because again, I looked into this a little bit, but James Madison actually had written about it. And what he was, I mean, again, this is one man, you know, we're talking about a whole bunch of wealthy, egotistical slave owners. So, but James Madison, just being one of these assholes, actually wrote that he called them factions. And what he was worried about was that there would be a tyranny of the majority. I'm going to go ahead and assume, I mean, because these guys were like Calvinists, you know, these guys came from the Protestant Reformation, from Newton, from classic liberalism in England. You know, these guys were John Locke fans. They believed in personal, I mean, they're basically libertarians.
Yeah.
And the last thing they wanted was populism, you know? And so he wrote that what he was worried about was factions, taking over and, you know, 52% of the population making slaves of the other 48 and doing horrible, horrible things, which is ironic because the Electoral College has led to a two-party system where we transfer back and forth who's going to be shitty to the other half of the country.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, and I feel like, to be honest, the Republicans right now are very afraid of what the other essentially 52% of the population is doing right now.
Well, it's not even 52%, and we're gonna discuss this in a little bit, but like, you gotta remember too, it's like most of this country, and I'll talk more about it when it's my turn, but most of this country is center right to right. There really isn't a strong left wing in this country. There's a lot of people that think they're leftists and think they're liberals.
Who would you say? I mean, because I would vote, if I was going to say, who are the most leftist politicians we have? I'd say they're AOC, they're Bernie Sanders, they're Ilhan Omar. Ooh, you want to talk about a dream team? Ooh,
yep,
baby.
Yeah, no kidding, right there, huh?
I don't care if Bernie's old. I'll be gentle, but. That guy,
I got a feeling that he might give it to you.
You know what? He deserves it. Yeah. He's earned it.
Yeah, Big Daddy Bernie's gonna treat you right. Don't you worry about it.
That guy's as old as grandma and liberal than most of the people in a college freshman class. Like, he's been on the right side of history forever.
Yep.
He's
never had to evolve.
I kind of like the that picture that goes around of him getting arrested at the civil rights protest. They photoshopped, you know, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden as the two cops dragging him away.
Yep.
It's pretty fucking accurate. Do you remember?
I honestly haven't seen that.
I don't know if you guys saw in the news last week that, like, Nancy Pelosi and a bunch of the right-wing Democrats were literally took a minute on it. They had a DNC Senate group chat.
Oh, is this the Dodgers Lakers bullshit?
No, that happened today.
Okay.
Or I think it was today. But yeah, no, this was like this was during the week earlier where Nancy Pelosi and a bunch of the old, you know, Democrats came down from hanging upside down in their cave and decided to lambast AOC and the squad and all of them, basically saying that, like,
you're ruining
defunding the police.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all the leftists kept their seats. It was all the old fucking dinosaurs that got voted out.
Yeah. Well, and there was another call similar to that where all the right-winger Democrats were yelling at Pelosi and her ilk for being too liberal and costing them elections.
That's because, you know, people want to think about this Democrat versus Republican as kind of a heartbeat of the nation. But honestly, the civil war happening within the DNC right now is kind of closer to where the country is.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, since this is our first podcast and you haven't gotten to know us very well, just take note, we're probably going to hate on Democrats way more than we hate on Republicans, because Dems are pretty fucking awful, too.
Well, yeah, because who are you going to complain about? Hitler or the guy who keeps coming over and setting your house on fire? Right. One is more evil than the other, but one of them is a bigger threat that's based in reality. I mean, MLK actually had this quote that people want to talk about the dream speech and want to talk about a guy who is a pacifist and, you know, always had nice, kind things to say, because, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to turn him into a non-threatening figure that's not an angry black man. He has to be a statesman and he has to be kind, because that's what we're taught. We grow up as children being taught that he was just a nice man in a suit who walked around Selma and somebody threw a fire hose at him and he shook his finger and said, "Hey, I'm gonna love you anyway," and then racism was over.
Yep.
And that's not what happened at all.
Nope.
But he had this amazing quote. God, I should have looked it up. I didn't think we'd go there, but I'm gonna paraphrase Dr. King here, but he basically said that, like, worse than, you know, the outright racist is the white moderate, you know, who says, "I believe in your struggle, but I would wish we could do it at a more convenient time." And that's, I don't know, I think it's really telling, and that's a truism that never goes away, because you look at, like, the BLM protests and everything that happens, and it's always, "Well, I believe in what they say, but they're destroying property and violence is in the answer." It's like, well, when violence is being metered out by the state over centuries, unceasing, any act against that, it becomes an act of self-defense. But it's not pleasant. It's uncomfortable. And the sad thing is that only when the white moderate becomes uncomfortable does anything fucking change.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to talk about that.
Well, and the weird irony in all of this is that, I mean, if we're going to talk about, like, if we're getting into, like, protests and destruction of private property, there are numbers on this. Out of all the protests that came out of, like, George Floyd and everything that's been going on, like, something like 93% of them were peaceful with no damage.
And a majority of the damage was done by right-wingers,
exactly,
leftists.
Exactly. So, but that's the thing. But You know, it's a bunch of fucking neo-Nazis and freaking Proud Boys trying to stir up shit to create some race war or something when the facts just don't comport with that version of reality.
I mean, let's not forget the Proud Boys are going through their own civil war because they're not racist enough. Half of them, they're like, wait, we are not nearly Nazi enough. We need to be the Proud Boys now. Yeah. We need to wet our pants for Hitler.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, anybody listening, if you're a Proud Boy, I would like you to go get fucked. That is all. Back to our regular scheduled programming.
All right, Electoral College.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We actually had a topic we were trying to discuss.
Yeah. But we were on a good point on that one. That I actually agree with you, Kay, because I think the nefariousness comes in from the true motives versus what was stated. You know, like Alexander Hamilton, I found this great quote when he was writing in the Federalist Papers, which for you people who sleep with people rather than read history books, was a bunch of...
You mean the rest of us?
Yeah. Most people who have a life and don't read obscure history and remember stupid facts, but they can't remember what they had for breakfast. For those of you who are normal, the Federalist Papers were basically when the Constitution was trying to be ratified, there was no internet. There were no telephones. There wasn't even a goddamn telegraph. I mean, people were literally taking shit by train and horse. So the process to ratify this Constitution took a very long time. So during this, the guys who were trying to get it passed were writing articles, and they called them the Federalist Papers. And there were articles basically saying, hey, guys, a federal government is good. State government is bad. This fractured Confederacy fell apart for a reason. We need to have a strong federal government. And they would lay it out constantly, basically writing these essays on why this was a good thing. And what he wrote was his quote is that the Constitution is designed to ensure that the office of the president will never fall to the lot of any man who is not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications by men most capable of analyzing the qualities adapted to the station and acting under circumstances favorable to deliberation and to a judicious combination of all the reasons and inducements which were proper to govern their choice. Which basically he's saying, I don't want some idiot son who's a moron and is incapable of holding this office with dignity to hold the office. And well, with the last two Republican presidents, that's been a bit of an issue. You know, between W and Drumpf, we've actually run into an issue where we actually are having people in office who don't have the mental capacity to complete them.
And that's regardless of whether you agree with their policies or not. I'm not a big, I don't think anybody here is a big fan of Obama or Clinton all that much, but at least they carried themselves with a decorum and a demeanor that was befitting of the office to an extent.
In public, yes.
Yes, exactly. There you go.
I don't want to say that Clinton was really full of decorum, but to be fair, Bill Clinton was a chaste monk compared to JFK or his successor, Jumbo, who literally wrote letters to people talking about his swinging horse meat.
Yeah, that's true. But here's the thing. Like, I don't, in terms of sex, like, I don't require my president to be a freaking straight up prude chaste. Like, I don't care if a guy is banging chicks left and right. I don't think that's any indictment on how they run a country.
They only get paid $250,000 a year. That's the reason you do the job.
Right? I mean, seriously. It doesn't, like, I don't, just because a guy gets his dick sucked in the Oval Office, is it classy? Fuck no, it's not. Is it something that we expect? No, but it's a social construct. This country was founded by prudes and it remains run by prudes. The only reason that was a problem for people is because they got a problem with sex.
I'm sorry, I can't think of a classier place to get a blowjob than the Oval Office.
I don't actually care what a president does behind closed doors with anyone.
100%
I have a problem with I have a problem with all of the conservatives that claim to have morals and the sanctity of marriage, and then the hypocrisy of a president like Trump, where he's got 26 different women that have sexual charges against him.
Don't forget he's about had the children.
Three marriages, five children from three different women.
Rod dogging porn like, stars.
He was caught
and then bribing them not cheating to talk about
with
it.
His wife on it with a porn star and then paid her off with campaign funds. I mean, come on.
I mean, well, how else are you going to pay her?
Well, I mean,
not from
you know, paying
pocket.
All that.
Let me tell you something.
All that tax as he does, you know.
I've tried.
Well, billions you don't have.
Yeah, I've attempted this. You bring a snap card into the massage parlor, you get thrown right out.
Well, you're just not doing it right.
But yeah, and again, it's right throughout the party. Like, okay, do you guys remember Anthony Weiner?
Yeah.
Senator from New York. Mm-hmm. Now, turns out Anthony Weiner sucks. Turns out he's texting 16-year-olds and like all
and
kinds
he's a
of stuff.
Gross piece of shit. Yep.
Yeah, and like he apparently like cannot stop like trying
didn't,
to nail
didn't he
children.
Like, immediately
over the place.
Resign after he was.
But that's
brought
the thing is before. But before that, actually, we didn't know about the illegality and the rife grossness he was up to at that time. That didn't come out till a couple years later. Actually, it was because of the Clinton emails.
Yeah.
Hashtag better emails. but it was actually, he was literally caught sending, not even a dick pic, literally sent like an outline of Anthony Weiner Jr. through his like lame gray boxer briefs to his mistress, an adult consenting woman with which he was having an affair and wanted to see his Jumbo Johnson. Okay. Like, that was a thing. She wanted it. It was consensual. They were adults. Now, was he banging someone on the side from his wife? Sure. Okay, so he's not husband of the year, but he's still qualified to be a senator. But the Republicans were up in arms that how dare he have a penis. And meanwhile, three of the Republicans who were calling for his resignation were currently under investigation for child porn charges.
Yep.
But this is the difference between the parties. The
in
Democrats,
comes QAnon.
I mean, don't get me wrong, the Democrats are spineless, they're ineffective. I'm not a Democrat, nor am I a fan of them. But the Republicans have the fucking audacity of an Ivy League rapist. Like, these guys will literally condemn the other side for doing whatever they want. Meanwhile, they will literally be having their hand in the cookie jar, and it doesn't matter. Yeah. And that's the difference.
I completely agree, and that's my exact point.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to disagree largely on minutia for most things, but in this, I think we can all find some common ground that, you know, don't be sitting there judging someone else while you're puppy kicking levels of evil.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we've gone into that. So the next thing I would ask then, if we've established what the Electoral College is, right? How did it come about? All that good stuff. The question is, I think there's two questions. Is A, is it fair? And B, should we abolish it? And I think those are very, separate, separate issues. Because, you know, we have, I mean, hell, the way we gerrymander districts isn't fair, but we still keep it, and no one's even going to go ahead and say we shouldn't be able to keep that going. And you can abolish something even if it's fair. Like, I believe the Senate is fair in terms of it's an even playing field amongst the states, but I believe the Senate should actually be abolished. I would like to simply see the House of Representatives as the sole legislative body in this country.
Well, and that's the tricky part of this, because what the electoral regardless of what its original intent was, in basically in our lifetimes, what we've seen is a situation where it's basically created a situation where the minority of this country has just as an equal, if not greater than, say in how it's run.
Far greater.
Far, far greater. States like Alaska, Wyoming,
Montana,
Delaware,
Jesus, Montana.
Yeah. Montana, yeah. They all get three electoral votes, electoral college votes, and that actually makes them more powerful than states like California.
Yeah, I can't remember. There's something like there was like a person's vote in Montana was like, I don't know, like seven people in California or Texas or something like that. It was ridiculous. And like, and that's we're talking about people in the continental U.S. How about Puerto Rico? How about
They don't get a vote.
There's a whole bunch of U.S. territories. You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of Polynesian islands that we, you know, Samoa. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who are American citizens, have constitutional rights, are protected by and adhere to American values, laws, and civil rights. And yet they don't get to, it's like, yeah, they get to vote in the primary, but who gives a fuck about the primary? Yeah, they don't get a vote for president. And if that is how can you expect taxes? That is taxation without representation. If you are not allowed to vote for the commander in chief, how is that not a violation of your citizenry?
Well, it is. And to be honest, the short answer to questions A and B is no, it's not fair. And yeah, we should abolish it.
Have you guys heard about the national?
It's antiquated. It's confusing. It's, you know, it just doesn't work for a modern America, especially when it could be so absolutely easy for all of us to vote. You know, I think an application on your phone, almost every American has a cell phone, almost. Now I'm not saying every, but you know, there's
again, at a certain point I think there is the idea that we do need to keep some level of security on it. So I would be comfortable.
Yeah, but we file our taxes through our phones. Why can't we vote?
Because if I file my taxes wrong, no one nukes Cuba.
Yeah, except that
the IRS is gonna be like, oh, Chris screwed up his 1040EZ.
No, but
later on, Guam.
Like, it could be done securely. You know, I mean, obviously,
I disagree.
Computer expert. I don't claim to be, but I can't imagine that somebody can't come up with a way to make it secure, effective, and
I mean, as soon as we can pull that off at a voting center, I'll be willing to entertain that option. Yeah. We can't even have secure, like, I mean, I don't believe this election was rigged at all. However,
there
is hacking, there is tampering, there is all kinds of things, and this is at watched public centers with software that is supposed to be ultra secure. I don't want that going out on Android.
Yeah. Like, I'm actually with you on that, Chris. Like, I really agree that I think that should be the goal. I don't think we have either the confidence or technical abilities in this country to actually make that happen just yet. And I think Chris is right. Like, we've got to start at the polling places, and there's other ways we can do this. There are things to make voting more accessible. How about a holiday to go vote? That's one of the biggest things we've been pushing for.
Well,
so they do in Europe. This election, we voted for days in a row. We voted for almost a week straight. What, 3 days, 4 days? That was beautiful. Why aren't we doing that all the time? Don't count the vote.
Oh, yeah, with all the pre-voting? Yeah.
Why aren't we doing a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday vote?
And not every state was doing that, though. You got to remember that, too. It's like, we got that here in California because we're lucky. We live in this state that was actually, like, you could send your vote in as early as a month and then track it and get text updates on where it was in the process of getting counted. Like,
I literally voted a month in advance.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah,
I got my vote in the mail. I filled it out and it was literally in the box and had been accepted 2 days later.
Yeah, insert the Peter Griffin meme. Why aren't we fucking funding this?
Yeah. Well, honestly, because I personally believe rurality. You know, the thing is that, like, the reason why the Senate will never go is because the Senate would have to vote itself out. And not only are you asking for people to vote themselves out of a job, again, states like Wyoming, states like Montana, states like the Dakotas, who have, you know, six dudes and a buffalo hanging out, have ultimate power. Why would they get rid of that? And the Electoral College gives them a shit ton of power.
Well, but then you also have the flip side. And this is the thing that if you talk to people on the right, this is the line you're going to hear. Well, if we got rid of that, then California and New York would just decide every election from here on out, which is true. And that's something I'm okay with because things I want would probably actually get put into place. But if you're going to play devil's advocate, you also have to think, okay, well, what happens if in 50 years, New York and California get taken over by Nazis? You know, and that's the thinking that you're going to get on the right, you know, is like, if the majority suddenly becomes evil, where is there a protection to stop them from ruling the minority?
Yeah.
And that's the question. That's the debate that you have to have internally in figuring this out.
And I think there's a good argument on either side that Madison was right, that you don't want this faction, this tyranny of the majority. But it's like that happens everywhere. I mean, you can say, I mean, look at, think about our two-party system is that. Hell, think of the Tea Party. What's that? That is a faction that took over the party. It's a minority that had drastic impacts on our politics here in the U.S. You know, that stupid Tea Party movement was huge. You know, I mean, and it's not even, I mean, it led to civil war in this country. You know, that was factionism. And again, look at, you know, you want to talk about a majority overruling the minority. Look at the current state of Islam. We have, you know, the reason the Islamic world is in such chaos, besides England, France, the United States sticking our dick in it for the last 100 years, is you get the Shiite and Sunni factions who are simply arguing over who was supposed to take over after Muhammad. Like that one argument of who gets to be Islam Pope has made war. How many lives have lost because of that? I mean, that's why we have ISIS. There's literally a party who is trying to start the apocalypse. That's why they're doing what they're doing. This whole Sharia law thing is a side effect. It's not that they're Puritans who are trying to get women to cover up. They literally are actually they want the foretold apocalypse to happen, and they are trying to conquer Syria and attack Jerusalem to make the apocalypse happen. Look at Northern Ireland. You know, yeah, you have Great Britain going into Ireland, taking over a chunk of it. And you want to talk about the majority screwing over the minority. The Irish just wanted freaking independence.
Yeah.
You know, and how much bad happened because of that. So it's like, I think there is a good argument to say that there's a lot of times where U.S. slave trade, there's a million times where you could say the majority can have tyranny over the minority and it's bad. But what's the alternative?
We have the alternative. It's the minority having control over the majority.
Well, like that, there's two alternatives. There's what we have and there's dictatorship. And neither of those things are acceptable anymore.
But because, I mean, there's a current there's a move to get rid of the it's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Have you guys heard about this?
Yes, a little bit.
Tell us more. Basically, the agreement calls for states to award all of their electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote, but not the popular vote in that state, the popular vote nationwide. So once all standard ballots are counted, California, you know, anybody, California, Texas, whoever's on this initiative, whoever wins the popular vote, which would be in this case, Joe Biden, last election would have been Hillary Clinton. That's who then gets all the electoral votes, which is ironic because it's then using the Electoral College to dismantle the Electoral College, which I love. But the thing is, it doesn't go into effect until enough states that have 270. Because they have to win. You know, it's kind of like you can't start a union in a company unless you have someone in management on your side. Like you've got to have that leverage. And so right now it's Washington, D.C., it's District of Columbia, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington.
A whole lot of Democrat states.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Texas came over. That would be huge. But yeah, it's like 100. I think it's like 190 electoral votes, something like that. And we need to get to 270. So we're more than halfway there. But if we could do that, that would be amazing. And honestly, all the arguments against it, I actually find to be arguments for. Like a lot of people have bitched and complained that like candidates would focus on the cities rather than going out to Iowa and whatever. Like all they would care about is New York City, Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, you know, St. Louis, Missouri, Boulder, Colorado. This is where they would
go. Going where the people are? That's crazy. Crazy, I say.
I actually think that a lot of people would explore a non-party candidate or their non-party candidate more often if they felt like their vote actually mattered. Because right now there's a whole lot of people in a whole lot of states, especially California, on the Republican side who feel like their votes don't matter. You know, Republicans in California, when you vote for a Republican candidate for president, it does nothing. Your vote is not going to necessarily have as much weight because you know that the Democrats are going to outweigh it. You feel a little bit disenfranchised that way.
Yeah. I mean, for all the record-breaking voter turnout that we keep hearing about, the projected percentage of participation this year was something like 66%.
Which was huge.
Which is supposed to be huge, but that's still like 35% of the voting population not engaging. Like, that's still a big issue. Like, and compared to other countries where voting is actually, they feel like they can make a change and they actually care about it more and they're encouraged to do it and they have faith in the system. Like, some countries can see numbers as high as like in the 80s. I mean, these are higher numbers, and the US can, I think the biggest turnout before this was in 1908 when we got like 65%. Mm-hmm. And now we're projected at 66. Like, okay, big whoop. Like, yeah, the numbers are significantly higher, but as a proportion of population, it doesn't really mean dick. We're still where we are 100 years ago.
Yeah. You're completely right, man. And that's a problem. I mean, honestly, like, and the three of us, you know, whether it's, you know, the three of us are all pretty opinionated voters. So I actually think that for us, how much our vote matters wouldn't change your voting much, but I don't think that's average. I believe disenfranchisement is a big thing. Like, personally, I voted third party.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I hate the Republicans. I hate the Democrats. I voted third party. Now, I got to tell you, if I voted in a swing state like Iowa, I would have voted third party because fuck them. But I sleep a lot better knowing that I live in California and it doesn't matter what I vote. The state's going Democrat. So yeah. I would still vote the same. But I'm not gonna sit here and lie in front and say that I don't have a privilege of living in a very heavy blue state.
Which, by the way, if you were one of those fuckers that was on TikTok or social media constantly saying a vote for third party is a vote for Trump, fuck you. Fuck your bullshit. That's not how fucking voting works. Okay, number one. Number two, no, it's not. Because here in California, literally every single person who voted third party could have voted for the Republicans and it still would have gone to fucking Biden.
Yeah.
So that's a stupid argument. Yeah, it may matter in some of the swing states. Sure, I'll give you that.
Well, and here's the thing. It's even if not, right? Like, I agree with you. I think you're completely right. But let's just say you're wrong. Let's just say that we had it close enough that third party votes could have tilted it and Trump could have won. That's not the fault of the voter for voting in a way that you don't like. You don't get to shame people for voting for your candidate out of fear. If someone wants to vote DNC, they should vote DNC. If you look at Biden and you're like, you know what? I like this guy. Or even if you look at him and you're like, he's good enough. That's fine. That's your choice. You should vote that guy. That's your candidate. That's when you're like, I like him. I think he can do the job, and I think he's better than that orange fascist, so I'm putting him in. And you know what? I can respect that. But if you're going to sit here and tell people that they have to vote, that if they vote anything else, like, I voted for third-party candidate, I voted for Gloria LaRiva because she's amazing. She's on the right side of history. She believes in nationalized healthcare. She has a platform that's actually humane, you know, something that would be moderate by European standards. And I voted for her because I believe she would make a great president. Did I think she was going to win? Of course not. But it didn't matter. I voted for who I thought should be president, which is the point of an election.
Well, and we've stopped doing that for the most part.
Yeah. We've become these factions that we were warned against by the founding fathers. The electoral process has given us the thing they feared. So, but I don't know. I think even if we went to popular vote, I believe that candidates going into cities would be a fantastic thing. You know, and beyond just like they would avoid the rural areas, they had to focus on cities where the population density is. But again, even if they did states, they would still be focusing on non-swing states. I mean, because let's be fair, fuck Iowa. Like, why does 5 dozen cow fuckers decide what the nation does? How is that democracy in any way, shape, or form? Why is it always, we got to see what Florida does? Florida? The nation is in the hands of Florida? No wonder everything's fucked up. Like, I don't need Florida man deciding this. Like, if
if we're going to have a handful of states that don't actually have high populations deciding our election, then we may as just go back to having the Senate pick our president. You know, yeah. America's fetish with states and the power of states needs to end. You know, this is what could get rid of the red blue state bullshit. In all honesty, think about it. Like,
I think that having a popular vote would lead to more people voting third party, and they're actually becoming a viable third party versus the two party system that we've had for the last 200 fucking years.
Yeah, we would actually have parliamentary government where coalition governments would have to be formed, where the will of the people and the voters would actually have to be cared about. Because right now, what do you have? You've got this two-party system where even if you agree with something, you have to oppose it. Anything the Republicans, anything the Democrats do, I mean, look at Obama. Hell, in his at the end of the term, he was trying to put, you know, a Supreme Court justice who the Republicans had nominated and liked, and they wouldn't put it through because, well, I'm not going to do what that Kenyan wants. And it has to be an opposition. The Democrats do it to a lesser degree, but they do it too. Yeah. It's, oh, that guy says red, I say blue. They say up, we must say down. We have to be, if we have to be the opposition, because that's the only way we're going to get the voters from the other half.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They don't care. They simply want to oppose because they can.
Identity policy, not politics. And that's where we, or politics, not policy. And that's where we get screwed up. But the best part of that would be the irony, honestly, because A, if it happened, it would actually, like, if we got this, if this initiative actually went through enough states, you know, if we got the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact done, it would probably go to the Supreme Court right away once it happened. But that's the best part, because constitutionally, states have the power to run their elections and decide it. So federally, that fetish with states' rights would be the thing to help abolish it. And the electoral, secondly, then it would go through, the Electoral College would abolish itself. Like, the dual irony of that happening would actually be beautiful, and I would like to see it in our lifetime. So, moving on to the topic of election results. Okay, I believe we were going to talk about them, actually.
So, election results, fun. So, as of right now...
They're coming one day.
We'll have certification as of December 8th, but I don't think that anything's going to change with any recounts or anything like that. So as of right now, assuming all states having been called, there's 290 electoral college votes for Biden and 232. Now, obviously, as we stated before, 270 votes is what any president needs to win and be crowned king.
Joe Biden was already king of the black people when this started.
Yeah. Remember, guys, if you didn't vote for him, you're not black.
Accurate.
that actually is very true. The demographics say so. I was doing some research on past elections, right? So Georgia, last 4 years, four elections, pardon me, has been a Republican state. This year, it has flipped, and it has flipped for a very specific reason. Arizona is almost always a Republican state. This year, it is obviously a Democrat state. So Arizona's Republican.
Yeah, very.
Those two states is where I'm kind of focus on today, and what I'm looking at is why we have the results we have today. And I know that there are some third party votes in each of these states, and I didn't take those into account when I made any type of calculation here. So Arizona has a population of 7.279 million people. So that's 7,279,000 people. Total votes for Biden is 1.648 for Biden, and Trump for 1.633. That gives the Electoral College to Biden by 15,000 votes, which that is crazy to think about. Except that when you consider that all of those votes, the majority of those votes, are coming from two places. Maricopa County and Pima County. And what's in those counties? The big cities.
Yeah, Phoenix is Maricopa, okay, so isn't it?
Phoenix, Glendale, and Mesa are in Maricopa County.
Glendale.
That accounts for 5 million people. So, like, 3/4 of the population lives in one county alone. I mean, it's no wonder why we have Arizona being a Democrat state. Also, the other reason here is Trump was not kind to Senator
John McCain, and they love him.
John McCain.
They loved him.
And yeah, so John McCain, and he just trounced him every chance that he got. And I think that is a huge reason why they decided to vote Democrat versus voting Republican at this time. Second state here is Georgia. Georgia is always a Republican state. They vote Republican for governor. They vote Republican for mayors. They vote Republican for everything. Well, except for this election. So Georgia, population of 10,620,000. So once again, we have to look at why. And that largely revolves around the large cities. So Atlanta and the greater area, 3.6 million people. Biden is leading by 500,000 votes. Athens, population 213,000. You know, Augusta, 200,000. Macon, 1.5. Like, it just goes down the list of all these major counties that have major cities that have huge populations, and they're all for Biden. And then you go out into the rest of the state where it's much more rural and it becomes very Republican. So it tells us the same thing that we see with all of the states that have all the electoral votes. You know, they have huge populations. They're more liberal, or more Democrat, should we say?
Yeah.
Because they're definitely not progressive.
God, I wish.
You know, the thing is we have to understand that people oftentimes vote against their own self-interests. And they do that for a number of reasons. They do it because they either feel disenfranchised or they don't know any better, in my opinion.
Or because they think it makes them true Americans.
Yeah.
Identity politics is a hell of a drug, my friend.
Yep.
It is. And so now we have a whole bunch of, you know, Republicans that are going to where they count votes and demanding they stop the count. And we've got Trump's legal team filing, I think, 16 legal filings that have all been stricken down or just simply dismissed so far. And we're, you know, what, a week and a half in? I don't see that slowing down at all.
Yeah.
I think that's going to continue. That's where we're at. And I don't think that's going to change much. Historically, when their recount's done, you see a change of a few hundred votes, usually here or there. But it has very rarely, if ever, actually flipped a state in terms of from one to the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Georgia and Arizona thing are surprising as hell. So, I mean, and we shouldn't, you know, and that's the thing is, I agree with you. It's one of those I'm torn between. I don't know if I'm shocked or if I feel stupid for being shocked. Because Arizona, I mean, Trump basically begged Arizona to vote against him. Let's be fair. Not only did he fuck with John McCain, and you can like John McCain, you can not like John McCain. Personally, I don't get the Mr. Rogers vibes from him. He decided that gay people weren't allowed to have children, so I hope he's burning in hell next to Ronald Reagan. He's a piece of shit. But there were good things about him. He did save the ACA at the last second. He was not all bad. I'm not trying to lump him in with all the worst, but he wasn't great. But the point is, Arizona loved him.
Yep.
And I disagreed with his politics, but I don't think John McCain was a bad man. And I think he wasn't a liar. And I don't think he was a coward. I mean, the guy showed more balls in a POW camp over the course of a couple of years than Trump has his entire life.
Oh, then five deferments for shin splints?
Yeah, deferments for shin splints from Rich Daddy and Bone Spurs.
Bone Spurs.
And meanwhile, John McCain sits in a prison cell when he could have been released because he was the son of an admiral. And he says, no, my fate's going to be the same as these boys, because he's like, I can't look myself in a mirror and go home when these guys are dying in here. I mean, say what you want about him. Say what you want about war and about Vietnam, which was bullshit, blah, blah, blah. The point is, that's integrity, dude. And that's something that Trump doesn't not only recognize, but he then went and attacked and was like, you're going to go after the guy who has, like, the coolest effing war hero record there is and call him an idiot and a coward? Like, are you kidding? And then John McCain dies. And what does he do? He has to go and shit on the grave. He goes after the guy's wife, his widow, goes after him, won't go to his funeral. I mean, it was just, the hell are you doing, man? It was the dumbest move he could possibly do. And so it's like, of course Arizona's going to vote against him. But at the same time, I'm still surprised. Georgia, we have Stacey Abrams, gets the election stolen from her. Republicans do all the... Stacey Abrams, right? That's
Stacey Abrams. Yeah, right. That's correct.
I said it,
I was going to talk about her.
It crashed on my ear wrong. Okay, well, then I'll let you talk about that, her. But like,
no, please. The thing is Stacey Abrams has spent the last 2 years doing nothing but registering voters in places like Atlanta and Macon and all of the other large cities.
Yeah,
because she knew that in 2 years it was going to be very, very important. And it has. It has been, I would say, pivotal for the Democrats and for Biden.
Yeah.
Now, she didn't know that Biden was going to run 2 years ago. She just knew that she didn't want to have happen to a presidential candidate that what happened to her.
She actually should have been his VP pick.
I absolutely agree.
Wasn't she on the short list? I thought she was.
I mean, she was on the short list that we're all told. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, who truly knows who and when and how they make that decision, to be honest?
Biden spun the wheel of Democratic women of color.
Yeah. I mean, but let's be honest here. If you're Joe Biden, I mean, if you have a choice between a cop and a woman who actually gives a shit about people and getting them out to vote, who are you going to pick? The cop, right?
I think Joe Biden is so out of touch that, yes, he thought picking a cop was a good idea. He read the room and went, yep.
Yes, but I was being sarcastic. That's exactly the point I was getting at.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing with you. I'm backing you up on that point. Like, I think you're right. I think that was a terrible, terrible choice. And I think that was done because he's so out of touch. And I think he doesn't get it. This is a guy who put fucking malarkey on his bus.
I mean, that could be true. I'm not saying you're wrong. I would disagree, though. I think it's more that he does get it because, like I'm going to talk about, this country loves its cops. And I think he knew exactly who he was speaking to.
Well, then let's talk about it. I mean, moving on, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, let's talk about the right wing of the American left.
Yeah, or lack thereof, as the case may be. And this is something that, like, is important, especially if anybody who bothers to listen to this is going to understand anything about us and our views and what we believe. Like, this is facts. There isn't really a left wing in this party. There is a party that says they're left wing, and then there's the right wing party. Okay. And there's data on this. We can do this. There's a Gallup poll that actually came out last year. It was basically just polling people to find out where they stood ideologically. And now take this with a grain of salt, because what's called the American left by most other standards of, like, first world countries is pretty fucking center. and what, you know, America calls center is right wing, and what we call right wing is fucking fascist crazies. So
I would even call our left wing is worse than center, because, I mean, honestly, think about who's in charge of our left wing. It's Hillary Clinton, it's Joe Biden, it's Nancy Pelosi. Yeah. These people are right wingers in Europe.
Absolutely. They're center right corporate Dems.
Well, and they're all old as shit and out of touch.
But that's something to keep in mind. According to this Gallup poll, all right, 37% of Americans on average identify as conservative, 35% as moderate, and 24% as liberal. Okay. And again, most people that identify as liberal, I mean, anybody moderate or right is going to call them extremists or some bullshit like that. But if you look at what policies they tend to vote for, it's usually moderate to center right policies. And so that's what I mean when I say that there is no left wing in this country. There are people that are left. There are leftists. The three people on this podcast are examples of that. But we wield little to no real political power. I wish, and I know that Chris and Kay are going to agree with me, I wish we could have voted for this socialist left-wing Biden that the right keeps putting up and saying exists. That's the guy I wish I could have voted for.
Yeah, where's the flag-burning Joe I keep hearing about?
Yeah, right? But he's not. And if you look at their policies, what you really have here, what the Democratic Party is, and this is something it's important that everyone fundamentally understands, whether you're left or you're right, you need to wake up to this realization. The Democratic Party is not some radical leftist, you know, crazy party. They're not even some liberal party. They are center-right corporate Democrats. They are right-wing in everything but a few social issues. They will swing left as long as it's politically convenient to do so. That's why you get situations like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama having to evolve on gay rights when people like Bernie Sanders were always there advocating for them. All right.
And I think the most damning part of that isn't that they were even against them. Like, for instance, I actually don't believe that Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden were ever anti-gay. I believe that Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden didn't give a crap, and they were going with what was politically viable. And what was politically viable back in the 80s and 90s was to be anti-gay marriage. And they shifted when the winds, after the winds shifted. Yeah. And I think that's actually far more damning. I'm far more likely to be okay with someone evolving on the issue than someone who literally fought against people being people, even though they knew it was wrong because it was convenient for them.
And I agree. And that's what makes me those mad. Anybody that can look at the evidence and say, you know what? I was wrong. I'm changing my opinion. That is someone that should be respected. But when it's constantly happening and always happening after it's a political advantage for it to happen, it becomes suspect. And I agree with you. I didn't used to. I've evolved a little bit on my viewpoints on these things, but now I do. And it's disgusting. All right. Like, this isn't something that you should have to just, I actually think this is good now. I thought about these issues that we've been talking about for fucking years. And now all of a sudden that it's not going to hurt my hurt me politically. I'm on your side. Bullshit. Yeah. But it's indicative of what most of the Democrats do. I mean, people like, and again, there are things that people like Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton that they've done that I've liked, but part of the problem that we've had here is that, I mean, really ever since Reagan, the Democrats went to this, you know, Trump, it was actually championed by Bill Clinton, is this idea of shifting to the center and moving into corporate interests. And as soon as that started happening is when shit went down, because they stopped giving both parties. And this is especially important for anybody that's the middle class and lower. Both parties care more about corporate interests than they do about helping you. All of them talk about, you know, working class and working class. What has any party actually done for the working class in the last 20 years? Can anybody give me anything significant that's had advantages? I mean,
No, it doesn't exist.
And it doesn't. And again, anybody that's out there, like, we'll probably, I mean, this is probably for the end of stuff, but we'll be setting up, you know, Facebook and Twitter probably by our next podcast. So you guys can comment and do whatever you want, but it's a legitimate question. Because most of what they've done has been surface level stuff, if that. It hasn't really affected any change. And what we keep seeing is a situation where the Dems stay center right and don't really put anybody up that's again, like Sanders, as an example. All right. And the right keeps getting more fucking crazy and more fucking out there. And the more fucking out there they get, the more they keep accusing Dems of being liberal left wing nutbags when they're really the same center right corporate chills.
The Republican conservatives, they lean into that shit, and the people just fucking eat it up. It's absolutely insane.
Because culturally, socially, And politically in this country, people don't understand what it is, what true leftist values are, what we truly want. And again, in a lot of countries, you know, people like Bernie Sanders would be a centrist, a hard centrist at that.
Yeah.
But his ideas are looked at here as if there's some extreme bullshit. You and again, I want this out there. Like, this is something you guys start looking at other countries. Look at Canada. Look at Britain. Anywhere in the UK, really. These places.
Well, you've also got leaders that aren't politicians. Mm-hmm. They've done other things before they were politicians.
Yeah.
You know, but they have degrees in real things, not politics.
I would have to say that most members of parliament, England and France and Canada, they're also lawyers, you know, typically. Like,
I understand that too, but like, Trudeau, what does he have a degree in? It's not politics.
I don't know.
Or a lawyer.
He's got a PhD in being shitty to natives.
Yeah. He's real good at that. But again, it's that is neither here nor there. I mean, yes, it's a problem, but it's not the problem.
But yeah, you're right. Bernie Sanders' healthcare ideas are in line with 1940s England.
Yeah.
That's our left.
Yeah. And what I hear the most from the right is talk about cost and, you know, we can't do it and it'll raise your taxes. And I'm just saying, like, there are countries that have this in place and they're fine. They pay a little bit more in taxes and get back way more and not spending buckets of money to not die. It's not rocket science, you know? And again, this is one of the things that I've always seen is a really weird thinking on the right. On the one hand, you have all these America bros that are going to scream for the high heavens, what a great country and how we're better than fucking everyone. But when you try to tell them, hey, why don't we take what these other countries are doing, fix the problems and do it better? No, we can't do that. No way. No, that's communism. Blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
It's like either we're the greatest country in the world that can do everything better than everyone, or we're not. You don't get to have both. Like, okay, if you want your capitalist bullshit healthcare where people are dying because they can't pay for fucking, you know, flu medication or a flu vaccine, sure, but then you don't get to turn around and claim that we're the greatest country in the world. It doesn't fucking work that way.
Yeah, if you're willing to let your diabetics die because insulin costs $1,200 a shot or because asthma inhalers cost $500 a piece, and here's the thing, even that our leftists are culpable. For instance,
yes,
Cory Booker. I like Cory Booker. I got to tell you, Cory Booker, I've seen him in these Senate hearings, and he grew up in a poor neighborhood. Dude's proletarian, like... There's a lot of things I like about Cory Booker. You know what I don't like about Cory Booker is when Bernie Sanders was trying to make a bill to let America buy bulk insulin from Canada for cheap and give it to diabetics here. Cory Booker blocked it, saying that, well, there's nothing in place to ensure the quality. As if Canada's making bunk insulin.
Yeah, we're not buying fucking insulin from TJ.
No, this is...
Okay.
Insulin in TJ is great, too. It's the same stuff.
Of course, we're not
buying it from the jungles of Peru, like at some grandma's, you know, ramshackle laboratory. You're right. This is coming.
I'm just saying, like, you buy something from Tijuana, you don't exactly think that it's the most high quality anything.
True, but when you get it from America's Hat, you know it's good. And it was ridiculous. Their standards are the same as ours, but Cory Booker held it up for quality control. By the way. He received just an absolute horrifying ass ton of money from the pharmaceutical lobbying industry that year.
Sure.
No.
I'm sure the two things are not related.
Really?
Yeah.
The thing is,
right?
That's Cory Booker is one of the left heroes, man. And that's who we've got, a guy who's in their pocket and votes down cheap insulin. And this is a guy, this is a black politician from cities that have major people of color populations who are severely impacted by the lack of access to medical care for diabetes. And it's like, wow, you straight up hung your constituents and the people who voted you in out to dry so you could make some of that sweet boner pill money. Like, it's just, this is our left. That's our left.
Yep. Yep. And again, we can recognize when these people do something good. But when it comes to things that actually could help people and things that would probably cost a little bit more for these companies making billions. Oh no, we can't do that. No, cost too much. And it's, we can't test the viability of it. And it's not made in America. It's not the best. So we can't do it. Brr.
By the time Vietnam hit, more money was spent. By the time the ending of Vietnam, more money was spent in the war in Vietnam than was spent on education in the history of the country.
Meanwhile, we're all patting ourselves on the back while we're finally getting some results with this opiate crisis and prosecuting the offenders. And the actual people responsible, not the company, the company's going to get it a little bit, but the people, the family at the head of this are not going to see anything really happen to them.
No, they buried their assets and fled.
The ones that made the decisions and made this happen and knew what was going on, they're completely fine. And yet we're sitting here jerking each other off about how we got this. And ultimately, this is going to be a drop in the bucket for the company. They're not going to get hurt. They're not going to go bankrupt. They're going to pay everyone out and they're going to continue doing shady business because the left refuses to. We're great to tell everybody how great we are and how awesome we are. But when it comes to actually taking a hard look at ourselves and recognizing our faults, we won't fucking do it because we don't have the balls to. I hate fucking Republicans. They're right wing assholes. But you know what? They lean into their horrible. And that's how you get a Donald Trump.
Yeah, Donald Trump's the president we deserved. Like everyone wants the world to get better because Donald Trump is gone now. And just kind of like what you're saying, like, are we moving left? And it's like, look at who we just elected. That was our response to Donald Trump, was a guy who literally campaigned on nothing will fundamentally change.
Yep.
That was our answer to Trump, was to bring someone in to usher back an era that created Donald Trump.
And keep in mind, I want everyone to remember that quote, the only reason we know he said that is because somebody recorded when they weren't supposed to in a meeting of his wealthy backers. That's where we got that from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's what happens to everyone. I mean, that's remember Mitt Romney and his, 47%.
Yep. You have to remember, they tell the general populace one thing and the message to the people giving them the money, something completely different. And that's what we have to wake up to. All right. You know, I may talk shit about the right, but the left, you're just as culpable in all this mess too. And the real thing here, and this is the big issue. And again, at the end of the day, we're three straight white dudes giving you guys our opinions. We're all very well of our privilege here.
Yep.
We're all very well that,
yeah, that no one has any illusions.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. So let's get that out of the way. But when it comes to solving the problems that created Trump, the idea that the guy who was vice president before Trump came in is going to do something completely different to prevent the next Trump is a little ludicrous.
And let's not forget why he was vice president. Remember, we had an actual liberal, educated Harvard professor who had a very unpopular complexion. And so what did he need was a conservative.
Oh, and a funny name.
Yeah, and a funny name.
Don't forget the funny
name.
Oh,
yeah, a name that just doesn't sound very American. So even though Trump's actual family name is Drumpf. But regardless of that, look it up. Biden was vice president because Obama needed a straight man. He needed an old, crusty conservative to be the other half so that the progressives would vote for him and the boomers would vote for Biden, which makes sense. Just like why Biden picked Kamala Harris. Biden picked Kamala Harris not because she's incredibly intelligent, which she is, not because she's capable, which she is. He picked her because she's a woman of color. That's it. And Biden was Biden was that for Obama. Obama was like, I need an old white guy who's conservative. So it's like, yeah, we're bringing, like you said, we're bringing that guy in. Yeah. And that's what creates this. And that I think it's honestly, I would say it's this two-party system is not the entire reason, but I think it's a good chunk of the reason why the rest of the industrialized world has moved forward and why we can't. I believe no matter what, we'd always be behind because we're a terrible country. But I think one of the reasons why we're not moving, even if it's slower, is because of that.
Yep. I agree.
On things that are not moving forward, one of the things that I got to tell you is actually the only thing I'm afraid of with this election is the reaction of Trump's base. You know, you have to, you know, the question I ask is, okay, is it a cult? Are these nationalists?
Yes.
Or are these yes. fascists?
And yes. yes.
Yeah, that's kind of the because what I get to, that's kind of where I came to as well, was that it really is a trifecta of fuck. Okay, for instance, like there's lots of definitions of cult, right? Mostly they're religious, and you know, cults are defined by, you know, Merriam-Webster and a lot of people as, you know, groups of people who have beliefs, religious beliefs that aren't popular, that kind of thing. But Wikipedia, I actually think has the most relevant one for the 21st century. It actually struck me. I really liked their definition of a cult. And that is, yeah, I'm quoting it here. I wrote it down. In modern English, a cult is a social group that is defined by its unusual religious, spiritual, or philosophical beliefs, or by its common interest in a particular personality, object, or goal. God. And if that don't describe the needle dick truck flag waving Trumpsters, I mean, just a social group that is defined by its unusual philosophical beliefs or by its common interest in a particular personality, object, or goal. And especially in, you know, with the current trend we have in the Western world of non-God spirituality coming back into the rise. We got crystals and chakras. We got Scientology, you know. Get your Thetan, Xenu later.
Oh, you know. You trying to bait me? You're trying to bait me right now, aren't you?
I mean, it kind of sounds like
But I mean, seriously, there is a big rise in non-monotheistic classical religious beliefs. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. The old boys haven't gone anywhere. Hail Satan. They are all here. You can talk to Jehovah. You can talk to, you know, you talk to God. You can pray to Jesus. You can pray to Muhammad. You know, there's all the old school guys are still around. But you have to agree that non-dogmatic theism is also on the rise. And I think it's because religious belief is very slightly waning.
Well, it is. I mean, the nuns are still the largest growing voter block or population block as far as religion is concerned. And for anyone listening who doesn't
seriously
the nuns refer to anybody that identifies as non-religious or non-religiously affiliated.
So yeah, not Catholic ladies with a ruler and a penguin costume.
Yeah, not those nuns.
Nuns.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. See, I was totally not understanding that.
Yeah, the Catholic nuns are usurping the political spectrum. Like, it's called Operation Bad Habit.
Yeah.
I was like, ladies, habit? That seemed very strange to me.
That's only until next year, and then we're going to call it Operation Back in the Habit.
Divine ruler.
Yeah.
But so I'm kind of going with that definition for cult. And I think the Trumpers fit all the appearances of this. I mean, we got a central figure elevated to near godhood. I mean,
well, especially when you think about things like QAnon.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like QAnon is insane.
Yeah. Convincing people that Trump is saving babies from rapist Democrats at the bottom of Pizza Hut.
Well, that there's a sex cult ring thing going on in the bottom of a fucking pizzeria? What? How does anybody hear that and not go?
That has got to be a health code violation. There's no way a pizzeria could stay open to be doing that. Little Caesars.
Basement, it's fine. It's fine if it's in the basement.
And that was a joke for anybody listening. Little Caesars is a fine establishment with some of the world's finest culinary masterpieces of pizza. Amanda, this podcast is in no way mean for anybody to stop doing business or eating or enjoying Little Caesars in its finery. So when we're talking about this level of cultiness, the Trumpsters really do fit this appearance. Like I was saying earlier, with the central figure elevated to godhood, like, have you seen that? I'm sure you've all seen the Trump meme where he's buff and looking like Rambo and he's riding a tank with a machine gun, you know?
Unfortunately, there are some things you can't see.
Kind of like the Putin riding a cougar.
Yeah, but the thing is, those ones, like, I've actually got a few of them that I've used as my Zoom backgrounds in classes. And, like, let me tell you, some of them are hilarious. There's Teddy Roosevelt holding a flag and machine gunning a Sasquatch. And there's Abraham Lincoln riding a bear holding an AR-15 in one hand and the Emancipation Proclamation in the other hand. There's one where George Washington is dunking on the British. Like, they're amazing. they're hilarious, but no one takes them as truth. And if the difference is that Trump riding the tank with the machine gun with his chesty nipples sticking out, the Trumpsters actually see that as positive and real and accurate. You know, Matt and I were on a bowling team. Oh, and God, there was and it was in a bowling league a while back, because, you know, we're straight white men. And there was another team that was full of Trumpsters, and they wore this shirt that was the Punisher skull with Trump hair. And besides the fact that you clearly don't understand what the Punisher stands for,
two of them were cops. So, no, they don't understand what the Punisher stands for.
No, they don't get it.
That is also true. But it's that, like, they saw that awful Trump hair, and again, it's a positive thing. And it's like, no matter what Trump does, I mean, God, his sad little old man dances, you know, that he was doing in the camp, people were eating it up.
He crushed, he killed it.
Yeah, that guy could.
Yeah, because he was flopping around spasmatically, like
clearly trying not to fall over. Like, I mean, again, I'll put my tinfoil hat on here. I'm very convinced that Trump had a stroke. That's why he was rushed to Walter Reed a year ago, and that's why two hands to lift a urine sample cup sized bottle of water to his lips, and why he can't walk down a ramp. I think he had a minor stroke, and they're covering it up, and that's fine. I mean, look, FDR, people didn't know how bad he was. Fucking yeah. His wife.
But there's a history of that throughout time,
because there needs to be
making the illnesses of the president, no matter what it is, seem not as bad as they are.
But what I'm saying is, if they had come out and said that Trump had a stroke, the Trumpsters would have made stroke flags and talked about how great strokes are. Like, that's the difference, is they can't, they've lost their objectivity of what is good and what is bad. I mean, they were,
it's absolute complete cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, I mean, this COVID thing, they completely refute all science and believe in voting conspiracies because the great leader King Jong Trump said so.
Yeah,
you know, they do these, they're like religious chants at his rallies where they cheer "lock her up," and that's left over from the Hillary campaign. Now it's to any woman who dare oppose to Orange Führer. Yeah. You know, they lock her up, lock her up, and it's creepy. It's cult like. You know, they ignore any flaw he has, like being a rapist, being a pedophile, his blatant idiocy, his bankruptcies. He goes after Joe Biden's children. His children are banned from running a charity because they stole money from kids with cancer. I mean, you can't make this shit up.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got uniforms. They wear red hats. And the ultra-fascists wear Proud Boy polos. Like, these guys have fucking uniforms while they are chanting for the fearless leader. That is a cult, you know?
Yeah.
And now if we're going to look, the other thing I would say is that there's, what's the difference between nationalism and fascism? Because remember, Trump actually called himself a nationalist.
Yeah, I don't know that there is a difference anymore.
I think
they're one and the same. I mean,
there's nationalism is a purified form of identity politics. So like we have identity politics. I mean, you have it everywhere, even in like Europe. You know, you go to the House, you know, you go to the European Parliament, they've got their Tories and their Labors and their Liberals and their Conservative parties. Identity politics is everywhere. But nationalism is like the condensed pure grade Colombian sweet chiba of identity politics, you know, and it basically makes you identify really close with a particular group. So much that you put an inordinate effort into advancing like the cause and reputation of said group, which in this case would be the Trumpers, right? I have a quote over here that I found from Orwell, and he said, "Nationalism is always about competitive prestige. A nationalist is compelled in every case to ensure that their identified group has more prestige, wealth, power, honor, success than any other groups. Whether that means extolling their group or defaming or destroying others, or whether it means lying, cheating, or abusing the system to give their group advantages, a nationalist is a fervent zealot, not for a cause, but for a group." Yeah. And think about America First. That's what that is. That's nationalism. Hell, even in non-Trump politics, like when we say the president's the leader of the free world, that is the most arrogant, ridiculous. I hate that term.
Yeah, because America is the only place where freedom exists, right?
We're the only place where freedom is, and if we're not, but that's the thing. It's like, first,
good God,
it's dueling identities right there, because we claim to be the only people who are free, but then we say the leaders of the free world, then acknowledging that there are other free places, but they owe us. There are
they owe us.
We're the leaders of the free world. Yeah, in a percentage of population that believes in angels.
Yeah, pretty much.
People who think vaccines are fake, sure.
Mass incarcerations. Yeah.
The difference between that and fascism is very similar. Fascism is to nationalism what the Tea Party is to the Republican Party. Fascism is nationalism. It's just where that group, that identity politics group, in question, it's constructed around a racial identity as well. And remember, Hitler didn't start that. That was Mussolini that started that. You know, he was trying to make this Romanism, Aryanism party. And then Hitler was like, hey, you know, these Jews are bad. That's a good idea. Aryans forever, man. And the Japanese did the same thing. And it's actually why people think that Hitler just lumped the Japanese because he needed them. No, it's because the Japanese agreed. The Japanese thought they were the superior Asian race. You know, they had their emperor, like they were the empire of the East, and they had that in common. That's what made them fascist. It's nationalism with a racial motivator, where the group sees itself as better, not because America, but because we're white, you know, or whatever. So like, for instance, like, okay, the John Birch Society and jingoism, you know, these are extremely aggressive and warlike foreign policy, you know, organization and nationalist movements, but they're not fascist because there's no intrinsic racial argument to be made. Whereas just plain old white supremacy is fascist.
Yeah.
Because it can only constitute itself in racial terms.
Well, and I'm thinking more in the terms, I mean, you're just talking about straight nationalism, whereas I hear nationalism at this point. And again, it's something that is now being ingrained in me is I think hear nationalism, I immediately go to white nationalism.
Yeah.
It's the most prevalent type there is.
Yep.
And even the lines between nationalism and white nationalism are starting to blur under a Trump presidency.
Well, and white nationalism is fascism. It's just a different way of saying it.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be both. One, they're not mutually exclusive.
No, but if you are one, like you can be A and not B, but you cannot be B and not be A. So, for instance, like,
correct,
you can be a Republican and not be a Tea Partier, but you cannot be a Tea Partier and not be a Republican. You know, just like, okay, for instance, like ISIS is a good example of a nationalist movement, not a fascist one, because they're about advocating Islam, which is across any racial line, right? But like Islamophobia is fascist because it's pretty much anti-Arab.
Yeah.
Anyway, and like, so like the DNC and the GOP, these guys are nationalist groups. They're ultra-nationalist. They are America first. They identify the group. That's not good. Nationalism is bad. But Trumpism is where it's crossed over to fascism, you know, and I think that's where we have to be careful about the line.
The fact that we call it Trumpism, I think, tells a lot.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It has become a descriptor of a special flavor of fascism, just like Nazi fascism and Romana Italian fascism and Japanese fascism. This Trumpism has become synonymous with white nationalism. It is the newest wing to take. It is the Third Reich of white nationalism. It's got a strong fascist wing based in the alt-right. I mean, it's literally the worst of all three. And I think what we need to worry about as leftists is not, and that I think is what marks the difference between leftists and liberals. Liberals want to elect Joe Biden and want brunch back, and they just want everything to go back to normal because Cheeto Man is scary, and they want people to be nice on Twitter again. That's all they want, because liberals are privileged, and they're privileged people who don't care about anybody else's issues, unless you're the one thing they care about. But if you're not that one thing they care about, whether it's gay rights, homeless, whatever, like liberals tend
whatever
to have
their
a pet
flavor of the week is.
Yeah. Most liberals tend to have a pet issue or two.
Yeah.
Leftists stand on the side of the oppressed at all times. That's the difference. What we need to worry about, I think, is that liberals want Joe Biden back and liberals want everything to go back to normal. But there is no normal. Normal's gone. We had Trump. He's not going away. And the worst part is neither is followers. And that's what we have to watch out for. We have to stay on guard. We have to stay mad, but we also have to ignore his claims and give them no validity. Because one of the things that's been really helping this process of him not wanting to relinquish power is the media, even Fox News, all major media outlets have stopped covering him, caring about him, and have stopped giving any lip service to, well, we'll see, because Trump wants to bring some lawsuits, and well, we'll find out where those go. Like, even like the right-wing news outlets are like, no, Joe Biden's the next president. This is stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, move on.
And that's helping, you know? And so it's like, we need to fight not just the Trumpsters, but we need to fight those who would give him a chance. Because we cannot take him seriously because he is not serious.
I mean, that's exactly it. And this idea that, you know, next year is going to come around and Trump's just going to fade into obscurity, it's a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. It's like you said, there is about 30% of this country that thinks he is the next fucking Messiah. And he is going to control them and grip onto them and hang on to them forever. And every single time, now that he's going to be ostracized by the Republicans, every single time the left or the right do something, he is going to latch onto it. He's going to comment on it. And his base it can grow even more than it already is.
Yep.
And it's by his bullshit leadership that you get Trump 2.0 the next time. And what scares me the most about this, Trump's a fucking imbecile. And look how much horrible he created. Imagine somebody that's Trump level of evil and has some semblance of intelligence.
Mike Pence?
Pretty much. But that's what I'm worried we're going to get, because we elected another centrist who's not going to fix anything. Yeah. Joe Biden is going to do nothing to fundamentally change the anger and frustration that people felt that drove them to Trump in the first place.
I think Mitt Romney is going to be our next GOP running guy. I think he, good chance he'll be the next president, actually.
I don't know. I mean,
he's been campaigning hard. If you look at what Mitt Romney's done, is he's walked this amazing fine line of criticizing Trump, but not turning on the party. Like, what's his name? I forgot who the other guy was who was running against Trump. I can't remember his name, the Republican, but he turned on the party, and that's a no-no for Republicans. But Mitt Romney has said, nope, Republican good, Jesus good, white good, Trump bad. Yeah. And he's
done it with the skill of better than a politician. Like, it's taken a concerted effort
in a BLM rally.
Yep.
Not because he gives a shit, because it was damn good optics. And this guy's going to come back, and the right, because remember, unlike the left and Democrats, the right wing sticks to their party. These guys do identity politics better than anyone.
Yep.
So they're all going to vote for him, but he's going to capture those middle ground people by being like, look at me. I'm not some crazy lunatic, and I'm not no socialist. I'm going to make America great again for realsies.
Well, and this is also where we need to get rid of the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because of this strong arm that happens by all of these unpopulated states that have far too much power simply because of how many electoral votes they get.
Yeah, the Republicans have us believing that they're a silent majority, but they're actually an incredibly loud and annoying minority. They lose the election every time, and that's why they don't want to get rid of the Electoral College, which is why it's important to abolish it.
Well, they don't lose every time. They've lost several times.
He's talking about the popular vote.
Yeah, popular.
Yeah, the popular vote. It's not every time.
It's every time in the last four elections.
Yes.
Sure.
But wait, well, that's a long time, man.
Yeah.
Well, I understand.
We're talking
but,
since what, 93?
But Clinton won both the Electoral College and the popular vote.
The popular vote hasn't swung Republicans since George Bush Sr.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. When you say that the Electoral College and the popular vote...
No, we're saying get rid of the Electoral College.
Every single time. No, but we are saying every single time, and that's not true. Clinton won both.
No, we're...
Both times.
We're saying the Republicans always lose the popular vote lately.
Yeah, not that they lose elections, that they lose vote, which is...
Sure.
Adding on to your argument, this is why we should have popular vote versus Electoral College.
Because then the Republicans couldn't pull this crap. It would actually bring both parties... more to the left, because the Democratic voters like Bernie. They like Yang. They like AOC. They like Ilhan Omar. Like, Democratic voters like progressives. You know, today we had Feinstein from California up there, who literally put forward legislation to congratulate her favorite baseball team. And I've been living for the comments saying, thanks, I can't pay rent.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's your average Democrat. Yep. And that's the problem.
Well, yeah, that's your average Democrat, with the added effect of them plugging their fingers in their ears anytime they're forced to face the hypocrisy of their own party.
I think it's more along the lines of, that's your average politician that has no idea what's actually going on with their constituency and is doing nothing to help them.
Yep.
I think AOC and Ilhan Omar are the very, very small minority of elected public officials that actually give a shit about the people that they represent.
Yep. And the one good thing is, politicians like them are on the rise.
Yes.
They absolutely are.
The left, and I don't mean Democrats, I mean the left, has learned the same strategy that the Tea Party employed. Grassroots organization at the local level, take it little by little, and then build up. And that's what they're doing now, and that's what we're going to see more and more. Even here where I live, it was remarkably close. Granted, part of that is because we switched to a district system instead of just, you know, an overall general popular vote for city council seats. But I live in a city that is Republican. Fuck, is it ever Republican? And I'm not going to say we won anything, but one of the heaviest Republican districts, the last count, it's a close race by 12 votes, which Jesus. This was supposed to be us, like, all out, like, going right. So it's changing. And a lot of that has to do with stuff that happened during George Floyd, with people hitting hard. Like, I'm not saying it's going to happen now, but in the next election, maybe. We take one seat, then we take two seats, then we take three seats. And the truth is when the left has control, people like it. The problem is can the left have control? You know, they like our policies. People like leftist policies because they benefit the working class, you know?
Yeah, but people like their propaganda.
That's also true.
And that's where you have a little bit less than half the country going with Trump. I mean, it's one of the reasons we're the laughing stock is this from this election. We're like, nobody can believe not only did that worthless sack of crap get elected, he almost got reelected.
Yeah.
That's a scary thought. That how can you look at this for? I mean, if there weren't a quarter of a million people dead, you could play Yakety Sax to it. You know, this 4 years of comedy of errors, this guy who jerks off in girls' hotel rooms, hosting press conferences at the Four Seasons Landscaping Company next to a dildo shop. Like, it's that was the perfect ending for it.
It's the culmination of 4 years of buffoonery. Yeah,
that image is the perfect example of what the last 4 years of his garbage presidency. What we're going to have, though, and what I think is, I guess what I'll close my point with is what I'm worried about is the right and what they're going to do not as politicians, but as the regular people. We got Trump, who is desperately trying to replace people in the military for some reason, not because they're on his shit list, because I think he's actually trying to have some kind of military coup, which won't work. But I'm worried about I'm not worried about the military. The military is sworn to the Constitution. Joint Chiefs of Staff are college educated men who believe in the Constitution. I might disagree with our military, but these guys don't give a shit about Trump. They serve the office and they serve the nation. And come January 20th, they're not going to do a goddamn thing he says.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is these fucking bedwetters in their trucks coming around and terrorizing impacted communities of color. I'm worried about lynch mobs. That's what I'm worried about.
You're worried about 10 Republican racist assholes determining where a bus can go or can't go, and then hitting a car, and then the police going, well, nothing we can do about it.
Well,
because that's the kind of shit that I'm worried about. Because
they're the guys driving the trucks, but also...
yeah, that's exactly why.
Yeah, and, you know, or some 17-year-old kid crossing state lines with an AR-15 because he wants to go shoot some black people at a rally.
Yeah.
Or some kid burning down a predominantly black church. Or, I mean, the list goes on. Or several lynchings here in California. The police are like, oh, nope, just suicides.
Yeah.
Well, and the problem is no matter who or what or how and the how left we are and all of that, it doesn't matter because we're never going to change the opinions of the far right. There's no way to change their opinion. They are who they are. They think what they think. They go along with everything that they do because that's what they've always done. They have no interest in changing. We on the left and we as liberals and Democrats,
you
typically want, what's that?
Oh, you said dirty words. I didn't like them.
Well, I understood that I said dirty words, but in general,
maybe that's a good point of clarification for anyone listening here. I think Chris has the best explanation for where the three of us align as far as the left goes.
All three of us are leftist politics. Kay is left of the DNC. Kay is a progressive. Matt is a hardcore progressive and definitely a leftist. And I am an outspoken socialist.
Filthy communist bastard.
I bring soup for my family around with me. So,
but the three of us stand. All I mean to say is that at least the people on the left are willing to change, are willing to think about and understand new ideas versus where those people that are QAnon and the cultish Proud Boys that have drank the fucking Kool-Aid have no interest in doing anything but doing what they do.
Yeah. And they're going to terrorize people, which is why the left needs to stay vigilant, stay connected, stay armed. You can only count on each other in your neighborhood. Do not count on the authorities. Do not count on police. Do not count on the government. Which, not that you can't count it for anything. Yeah. I am not an anarchist, and I am not saying government is bad. In fact, I believe in high taxes, and I believe in government programs. I think we should cut Jeff Bezos's head, drink his blood, liquefy his assets, and give them to the poor. But, and I believe that should be done through regulation. But
that's a whole other episode.
Red, white, and blue guillotine, baby. When it comes to people in impacted communities being terrorized by white nationalists, there has never been a time where the authorities have been on their side. And so your community is what keeps you safe. Stay connected to your community and watch out for each other.
Agreed.
Amen, brother. So,
white dude takeaways from our cisgender, straight, white, California male privilege.
I resemble that remark
dearly. What do we take away from this one?
I take away that the Electoral College needs to go bye-bye, and we need to find a better way, and that's popular vote, in my opinion.
I think one of the many ways, like, there's a lot of avenues that need to be taken to have this happen. One of them is true leftists, and I'm not talking about liberals, talking about progressives, leftists need to get on the same page and need to kind of try and take back the Democratic Party. If it can be saved at all, that's the best avenue. I think it's already started a little bit with people like AOC and Bernie Sanders having a bigger voice. But if we really want this to happen, leftists need to start taking a hard look at themselves and what they believe, and then taking a hard look at the party and waking up to the fact that it doesn't represent those beliefs.
Yeah.
That simple as that. Like, this should be our party, and it was hijacked from us by neocons a long time ago. It's time to take it back.
I don't disagree at all.
I guess my takeaway is that, yeah, the Electoral College needs to go. America is not moving in the right direction. I think Maddie Cakes was definitely right on that one. And that the election may be over, but this fight is not. I will give Joe Biden credit for being right on one thing. We are fighting for the soul of the country. I don't believe he is the antidote by any means. Joe Biden is a man of credible rape allegations who hired a cop as his VP. That is not where this country needs to go. But I do agree that we are fighting for the soul of the country in a manner of speaking, and we're not done yet. Well, that's going to wrap us up, and I hope the dozen or so of you who will hear this one day in years from now with our humongous fan base will enjoy this. And we will see you next time for another episode, hopefully far more polished than this, which is our very virgin podcast of the alt-left. Remember, kids, the revolution is you.